Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Psych Legal Pop podcast. This is a podcast where we talk about popular culture through the lens of an attorney and a therapist. I'm Brooke Brigham. I'm the attorney.
And I'm Tess Brigham. I'm the therapist.
And today we have some psych legal pop topics.
Mm-hmm.
Tess is going to talk about Survivor, the television show.
Yes.
I'm going to talk about Tiger Woods and his recent arrest.
Yes.
The latest arrest and his history, his driving history.
Yes. I've been seeing a lot of memes about his driving abilities. Yes. Like, why doesn't the man ever just take an Uber?
Well, or why is he driving while impaired all the time?
Yes.
So I'm going to talk about that. And then at the end, we're going to talk a little bit about the Meta. It's actually Meta, YouTube, TikTok, and Snap were all sued. And a jury has rendered a verdict. We're going to talk about that and the whole future of these lawsuits. There are many, many in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little bit about Savannah Guthrie. And that case.
All right.
So, Tess, tell us about Survivor.
So, we're at Survivor 50. It's season 50.
Wow.
And I've watched Survivor since the very beginning. I think there's some episodes of Borneo that I've never seen, but other than that, I've seen every episode of every season. I do remember the day in 2000, like, tripping upon this show when it was down to like the last four or five people and being like, what is this? And it was just, it seems so bizarre to me. Like, the tribe has spoken. Like, what is happening here? Like, this is so weird and how serious. And this is the other thing. This was 2000. Reality TV was very different. So I think we're very used to these tropes and these sort of things that we see, these, you know, part of our culture. But at the time, it seemed very odd that, oh, seriously, you guys are on this island together and you're putting this thing out. It's going like the tribe has spoken. It's just, it seems so bizarre to me. But anywho, we're at season 50, and season 50 is a completely all returning player season. And so what has been utterly fascinating about this season is that this, what's happened with Survivor is what always happens, which is that all of these players who have played before, what they do is they come back into the show with this sort of like, okay, these are all the mistakes that I made the last time, so I can't make those mistakes again. Or these are the things that bothered me, or these are the things that I was weak about. And then we take this attitude of like, oh, so if I just do the opposite of, or if I'm just hyper-vigilant about, then, you know, these things won't happen again. But this is a bit of, right, we were just talking about real lives of Mormon wives, like these patterns of behaviors, that if you don't really tackle the stuff underneath, that you just changing course, or you going, okay, I used to do this, now I'm going to do this. That just doing the opposite of something is not going to change anything for you. So this last episode was called Open Wounds. And this, it is, you know, for 25 years, I don't think in the 25 years that the show has been on that it's really ever captured something so well, this open wounds. It's like, it's not a metaphor, it's this diagnosis. So there are 24 returning players, some that have only played once, some that have played three or four times, but they're not strangers that are bumping into each other on the beach, right? Each of them has studied their own game. They've done a postmortem on what went wrong, you know, and they showed up with a plan this time around to do it differently. And this is what makes this show, especially this season, like very rich therapeutically, because we're watching all of these people try to change patterns of behavior. And so one of the stories that happened was that there was this guy, Charlie, who was a big Taylor Swift fan and an attorney from Massachusetts and or a law student. I don't know if he's graduated yet, but so he was part of season 46 and it was down to him. He was the runner up. And it was down to him and another woman. And what happened was that he lost and Charlie lost because his number one ally, Maria, didn't vote for him. And so Charlie felt very betrayed by that, very bothered by that. Okay. So now we're here in season 50. One of the contestants, this guy named Rizzo, was part of season 49. Now, none of the people that have that are on season 50 have watched season 49 because of the way they shoot the show. So none of these people know who Rizzo is. They don't know his history. They don't know who he is. They don't know if he's a, I mean, obviously he did well on the show if they're having him back, but he, is he a, you know, they don't know anything about him. So he is, and so Rizzo is this 26-year-old salesman from Yonkers. He's the son of Albanian immigrants and he coined his own nickname, which is Riz God, which a lot of people are, you know, rolling their eyes at. And so Charlie and Rizzo were talking and Rizzo told him the story about how, yeah, I was one of the finalists or I was down there, but I didn't vote for my number one, who is Savannah. I voted for this other person. And Charlie hears that and decides, I hate this person. I cannot trust him. I don't like him. The minute he heard Rizzo is someone who did not vote for their number one, that means that he is bad. Like just, he, it clouds his judgment. He's just like, this is bad. Now, Rizzo actually lied about that. He did vote for Savannah. Like Charlie is basing this belief and how he feels about this person based on something that's not even really true.
Why did he lie about it?
Well, it's part of the show. I mean, people do this stuff all the time. Like one of the biggest things is, you know, the occupation that people lie about the most that claim anytime we get a lawyer on the show, they never tell people they're a lawyer. There's something about that. Like people are very afraid of attorneys. I think it's because they know that they're good arguers and they're worried about them being very eloquent because really, if you can get down to the final three, that really does, your argument to the jury does matter. You know, you can win or lose it right there. So you have to make a compelling case to, you know, to everybody. So I think maybe he's just like, okay, I'm going to tell him this story. So, I mean, this is the way of, I don't know, the true psychological, there's, I'm sure, a better phrase for it, but it's just, it's baggage. Right? It's what we're seeing with Charlie and so many of these other people on the show is just unexamined patterns and psychological baggage. And, you know, the thing is that this isn't, it's, I'm not saying these people are weak or that there's something to be shameful for. It's just, it's an unprocessed emotional experience. The nervous system is trying to protect us from being hurt again. Charlie's nervous system is desperately trying to protect himself from not making the same mistake that he made last time. The problem is that I think that the reason why Maria didn't vote for him didn't have any, probably had some things to do with Charlie, but a lot of things that didn't have anything to do with Charlie. You know what I mean? He's responding to something that he had no control over. So because we tend to unconsciously recreate familiar dynamics, right? Not because we're broken or we're self-destructive, but because patterns feel known to us. And that feels right. Our brain seeks resolution of old wounds, right? Through these new situations. So if we're betrayed by someone we trusted, we unconsciously look for signs of that betrayal in new relationships. And sometimes we find what we're looking for and other times we don't. So Charlie's pattern was that he felt like he trusted someone completely, gave everything to that relationship, and was blindsided by their choice at a very critical moment. right? And the pattern that he was looking to prevent was never let this happen again. See it coming, take action first. And what he actually did was that he sort of put Maria's betrayal onto Rizzo, a completely person that he didn't know, and he reacted accordingly. And so in the therapeutic world, we call that like transference or projection, right? That it's you're reacting to someone or something that reminds you of the person rather than who they actually are. So Charlie never had a conflict with Rizzo. You know, Charlie has an unresolved conflict with Maria, and Rizzo becomes the stand-in. So, and this is a bit, right? We take this is our whole lives. This is what we all do. We take these internalized experiences that we have, a fear, a belief, an unresolved hurt, and we see it reflected outward in the world around us, right? So Charlie's wound about betrayal was so vivid that he actually then ended up saw betrayal where it didn't even exist. And that's the thing. One thing that people make the mistake is, and I think a lot of these players are making, is they believe that awareness is the same thing as something actually sticking or landing with you. Just because, you know, Charlie's story is very poignant in many ways because it's not that he's unaware. It's not that he doesn't know what's going on. He's an Harvard educated attorney, right? And he's very articulate. And he can talk about his emotional intelligence and all this stuff, but just because you know the words for it doesn't mean that, you know, just because you can name the patterns doesn't mean that you're, you know how to handle it. And so
can I interrupt here?
Yeah.
I think that this is like, I feel like what Charlie is doing and what you're describing is he's way overthinking this.
Yes.
Because also, in a show like Survivor, I don't think it's really possible to quote unquote learn from past mistakes to a really great extent because you're with a completely different group of people.
Yes.
And part of the dynamics of Survivor is that it's not just about what you do. It's about how you get along with the group and these alliances that form. And so every single time it's a completely different set of circumstances and people. It's not a formula.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can study all of the Survivor winners or how did they do that and then go and replicate that.
Yes. You're absolutely right. Brooke, you're so smart. You jumped ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
I'm listening to you talk about this guy and I'm like, this guy is just way overthinking it. It's like, calm down, Charlie. Like, just
To quote a Taylor Swift song, calm down, you know,
that's right.
you're speaking too loud. Yeah. I mean, and I think some of it is that I think one level is that all these people know that they're being watched. And so they're hyper vigilant of like, this is what I did the first time around. This is how people perceive me. This is how, you know, and so I am desperately trying to create a new version of myself for people. But you're absolutely right, which is you can't control how people see you. You just can't.
No.
You know, and I think that one of the hardest parts about Survivor for people, and I'm sure we've all been in this place where we have this recognition of, oh, I thought that whole group of people really thought I was super cool and wonderful and great, but I guess I wasn't. Like,
I was an asshole.
or I wasn't that interesting, or people didn't think I was that great, or I thought I was being this way or that way. And none of that came across. And I think that's hard. It's hard in a private way when we realize, like, oh, I thought I would have gotten everybody's vote on that one, or I thought I influenced these people. And then you realize, oh, no, you don't. So imagine those feelings that we have on a smaller scale versus now the whole world. And this is a very popular show. This is a CBS, you know, show that's been around a long time. You know, it's not some random show it's not some survival show on some random channel somewhere. Like, it's a well-known, so a lot of people are watching you. I'm sure people comment to you. I'm sure everybody in your hometown talks to you. Like, you're carrying these things with you from the beginning. But yeah, that's the problem, is everyone comes in thinking that there's some sort of formula that they need to follow in order to break these patterns. But what you're really talking about is this, is that, right, we see this in our real life, like where, and I'm sure we've seen this with people where, you know, you had someone who was cheated on, and then they become hypervigilant of their new partner's, you know, whereabouts, not because their new partner's done anything, but because, right, that old wound hasn't healed. Or, you know, someone who grows up in a chaotic household, you know, continues to micromanage. And, you know, all of these things, we do this to ourselves all the time, these overcorrections of things. And here's the thing, at the end of the day, guess what happens? Rizzo makes it, because Charlie was so myopic about Rizzo and this, he didn't even see that they were all plotting, and he just got voted out. So, spoiler alert.
So after all of that,
instead of being able to go, I need to see this person for who he is. Yes, what they said kind of bothered me, but you know, I need to move forward. I need to process that. He got so stuck in his head. And it was like, he wanted to punish Maria. So he was going to punish Rizzo. But because he wasn't paying attention, or he was paying attention mm-hmm. to the wrong things, he's now out of the show and devastated. And I really do feel for him. He was actually my number one choice for my survivor pool. So.
You know, why isn't Survivor more in the zeitgeist? I didn't even know the show was even still on.
Really?
Because I never see anything on social media about it. Maybe mm-hmm. it's just not in my algorithm, but I never see anything like advertising, nothing. I see nothing about it. It's like, I mean, who's watching this show besides you?
Well, Steve and I. We have a whole group of people that really? Also watch the show. Yeah. I mean, I think you don't see the show because you don't watch. You're not on CBS. You're not on Paramount. Like, you're not on TV. So I think if you were watching other CBS shows on a regular mm-hmm. basis, I think you would see this advertised. I just don't think it's you're not their demographic. So I just. But yeah, I mean, it's a huge show. It's been around forever.
When did it premiere?
2000. You and I watched,
Oh yeah, I used to watch it all the time in the beginning.
We watched the Australia. That was season two.
That's when we met Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Yes. And there's
turned into even a greater nightmare. But
yeah, and listen, one of the people from that show, Colby, he's on season 50, you know, and he's,
I remember him.
Yeah. 25 years later, here he is. He's still doing.
What was that girl's name? Jessie. Was she on that season with the curly hair? It was her name. Jessie.
Oh God. You're thinking about, she became a villain. Jerry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jerry didn't come back for 50, but, Jerry's been back a few times. And
do they still win $1 million, or have they upped the prize?
No, and that's the other thing too. I don't want to be rude. So when they did season 40 was Winners at War. So they brought back all the winners. Like everybody that won pretty much every season mm-hmm. came back. And for that they did 2 million. But yeah, it's back to 1 million. And what drives me nuts about this is, and I know this is going to sound really rude, but like, yeah, $1 million in 2000 was very different than $1 million in today's dollars. I mean, and there have been,
and they take half for taxes.
Yeah, there have been like one. I remember hearing one of the contestants. He was like a dentist, and he's like, "Yeah, I don't know. I mean, God, then they take half of that, and what is that? 500,000, 600,000? I mean, what am I going to do? You know? I mean, he was just like, he was already driving a Porsche. Like, he didn't care. So. But I mean, but I don't want to be dismissive of it, because there are many people that where this is life-changing for them, mm-hmm. like absolutely life-changing. I think, again, out here in California, there's a little bit of like, you can't even buy a home with that money, you know, $1 million that then is taxed. You can't, you know, it's hard to afford anything. Mm-hmm. So it feels very different. But I think the money motivates people, but I also think it's the, you know, the show, playing the game.
Yeah, it's more than money. It's it you have to go through so much that it's not about the money. It's, I mean, yeah, the money's nice if you win, but it's got to be about the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's too hard.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, this is the point that I'm trying to make is this, is that everyone, we all carry stuff around with us. I think there's this false belief that like you have to completely love yourself and be completely healed before you can be loved, you know, all of those before you can love other people. It's like, no, we're always in process. We are always in the midst of something. We're never quite there at the end. And so I just think that what struck me about Charlie's story is that it's this story that is so human, right? Because he was hurt. He never fully healed. He tried to protect himself. He overcorrected and then he paid for it. Mm-hmm. And every one of us, we carry something like this, hurt that we haven't fully processed, that colors how we see people, who remind us of that source of that, you know, and again, we make this rule for ourselves that after something painful that has, you know, happened, we have to apply these, you know, I have to learn something from and apply something to it. And here's the thing, you're absolutely right, Brooke. We carry ourselves and our history and our wounds into every single, you know, door that we walk through. You know, yes, you need to know that it's there, but it can't, you cannot let it drive is the best way for me to say it. It's like, and that's, you're absolutely right that none of these players are stopping and thinking like, I'm going to, you know, these are the things that I've learned about myself. This is what I know to be true. This is how I want to show up in the game. This is how I want to be. This is, you know, and now I'm going to respond to what's happening right here in the moment versus responding to something that happened.
Trying to fix something. Yeah.
And Charlie's not the only one. There's lots of other people that are on this season that are desperately trying to like, I was always seen as this, or I made this mistake or that mistake. And the people that are successful are the ones that are like, you know, kind of just rolling along going, okay, this is who I am. This is how I'm perceived. You know, okay. How do I work with that?
So what country are they in for this season?
So what's happened is they don't do the countries anymore. Cause I think part of that was, you know, they were in Africa. There were some places where they were like, this is not good.
It was Africa, probably.
Africa, they had to sleep in shifts, right? No one was ever, they were never all allowed to be asleep at the same time.
Why? Cause like, could they get attacked by an animal or something?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a safety thing. I remember that. So, So what happened was that somewhere around the mid 30s or something, they stopped doing a lot of these theme shows and they, and then at the same time, as a way of sort of streamlining things, they have their own, they're in Tahiti, I believe. And so they have their own island or islands, excuse me. And so the production, I think, you know, they're there for a set amount of time. That's why the way they do it is I think that they have a shooting schedule and they shoot two seasons a year. So what happens is they're like, okay, we are going to shoot season 49 and then we take a break in between and then we shoot season 50 and it's done at the same beaches. And so that way it's all permanent. I think that they found that maybe it's like a set. It saved them money and time. And really once after 40, season 41, they kind of started this new formula because it was post COVID. So they went from 39 days to 26 days. They, you know, there are, what else? You know, there's because of that, they don't really give them rice anymore. There's all that, you know, it's always about like, oh, we're, you know, you don't have to be out here so long. So we're going to up our game and make this more difficult or more stressful. But yeah, there's no more themes. There's no more like this city. It's really just about this game that we play. So. Mm.
Yeah. Some of those places, Australia was another one that looked really brutal.
Yeah.
Just the climate and the conditions and yeah, some of them were real bad.
And they still have, I mean, they still have climate and condition issues, but not to the extent that they used to. I mean, I think there's rainy days and sunny days. Like I think all of those things happen, but I think it seems like they pick a section of time that it's a little bit more reasonable, maybe. I don't know. I mean, but I think that they have, again, and I'm sure all these people have been on the show forever. I'm sure all of them are like, you know, they want to keep the same crew. So this is probably the best way of doing it is like, yeah, everyone leaves for 3 months and then you're home the rest of the year kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yes, wow. Yes. Surviving. But yeah, I'm a big fan. Steve's actually become, he used to rip on me like for watching Survivor. And now he is so into it. He's the one running our survival pool. He's the one that's constantly like, oh, I'm so excited. Survivor's tonight. Survivor's tonight. You know, he gets so excited. I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, I enjoy the show. I'm not as crazy as he is about it. I don't know why he enjoys it so much. He just loves it.
Something to look forward to. You know, yeah. Times are tough.
Yeah. Listen. Yeah. Times are something. Tough. Times are. They're very tough. Didn't you send me, I swear to God, I saw it this morning. You sent me a TikTok. Oh my God. It was really about how times are so tough. What was it about? God damn it. It was just about something that's happening in the world that it's like, oh God.
I think I sent it to you last night. Yeah. I can't even remember now.
All right.
I don't want to become one of those people who's always sending TikToks, like, unwanted TikToks. Okay. So, okay. Our friend Tiger Woods. So now, didn't we cover that documentary about him on HBO? It was called Tiger. I was trying to look it up in our archives. There was no way to search for it. I couldn't find it, but does this sound familiar to you?
Maybe. I mean, I feel we've obviously talked about Tiger Woods. I feel like maybe,
because a big part of it, of that documentary, and
that's right. We did, because the dad was a serial cheater. That's yes. Right. And that's where we learned about that. Okay. Yeah. It's all coming back to me now.
So I feel like a lot of Tiger's issues, or whatever you want to call them, stem from this childhood wound of his,
mm-hmm.
where, okay, so his father was a serial cheater on his mother, and Tiger and his mother were very, very close. But the dad would take him out to these golf tournaments, you know, when mm-hmm. he was coming up and in high school and college and whatever. And his dad had this RV or something that they would travel around in, going to these tournaments. And when they were at the tournaments, he would have sex with women in this mm-hmm. RV.
Right? And where's Tiger?
I mean, Tiger is there. He's not in the RV when it's happening, but he's, you know, he's at practice. He's mm-hmm. out playing golf, but he knows, he sees what's...
The RV is rocking.
The RV is rocking or whatever. He knows.
Yeah.
He sees it.
Yeah.
And I think that really, you know, and his dad was just so hard on him and,
mm-hmm.
you know, daddy issues. Big daddy issues. So... Anyway, he was arrested for DUI a few days ago. And whenever I hear DUI, I always think alcohol, but he actually had no alcohol in his system.
Mm.
They suspect that he was on some kind of medication because, you know, he was clearly impaired
mm-hmm.
and being very lethargic and whatnot. So they wanted him to take a urine test. To see if there was any drugs in his system, and he refused the test. So basically this happened before, well, finish talking about this part first, but
mm-hmm.
this is basically his second DUI. He was arrested once before for DUI in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
He was, This was the one in Florida. In 2017, he was arrested for DUI in Jupiter, Florida. He was found asleep in his running car at 3 a.m. And he did 0% alcohol, no alcohol in his system, did a blood test or a urine test. They found Vicodin, Dilaudid, Xanax, Ambien, and THC.
Oof, that's like, Dilaudid is no joke. Dilaudid is no joke, but that is a lot of downers, a lot of downers.
Yeah. So he basically passed out. His car was running, you know, he's parked, passed out. And this latest one that happened a few days ago was also same place, Jupiter Island, Florida. He was speeding at a very high rate of speed. And there was some kind of a truck pulling a trailer that was trying to turn. And the driver of the truck saw him coming up behind him, like at a very, very fast rate. Thought he was going to hit him, but there's nowhere for the truck to go. And so he's going very fast and his Range Rover clips the side of the truck, causing his car to flip over. It was on its side. He crawled out.
Tiger's car.
Okay. Yeah. He was crawled out of the car. So this speed, he's either speeding or he's, you know, asleep in his car when these things have happened, because he had a very, very bad accident in 2021 where he almost died and he destroyed his leg. He had to have his leg like completely put back together. Oof. I think this was in Malibu. I feel like it was like a windy road. He's going 80 miles per hour. But according to the LA County Sheriff, he had no signs of impairment and he accidentally stepped on the gas instead of the brake,
which I
don't know if I believe that. I think that they were covering for him because of who he was, but he almost lost his leg. He had extensive injuries, had to have emergency surgery. And, you know, he's had a lot of surgeries, six back surgeries. And every time he's kind of tried to make a comeback in golf, it's always these injuries that stop him. And he was just contemplating maybe playing in the Masters in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. Doubt that's going to happen now. But yeah. And, you know, we all remember what started it all. In 2009, this was like his fall from grace.
Yes.
Where he hit a fire hydrant in Orlando, Florida, and he had lacerations on his face. He basically, his wife, he got caught cheating. His wife at the time, Elin Nordgren, she broke the windshield with a golf club.
Yeah.
It's very dramatic. But, basically, he just got a traffic citation for reckless driving.
In 2009 or this time around?
2009.
Okay, got it.
And the same in the 2017, the first DUI, he pled guilty to reckless driving. He claimed he had an unexpected reaction to prescription meds. That's one of that list of stuff. He's taking all this stuff for back pain. And he completed a DUI diversion program.
Psych Legal Pop will be back after these messages.
Anyway, so this time, you know, I don't know if he's going to get as nice a treatment this time as he has been. I mean, he's basically gotten away with this multiple times. And so now, you know, and this isn't making Florida look good, that they just keep letting him get away with this. So basically, when you get a driver's license in any state, there is a concept called implied consent, where by applying for the license and them issuing you the license, you are consenting to a test of your blood, breath, or urine if you get pulled over and you're suspected of driving under the influence. So if you don't, if you just refuse it, first of all, it's an automatic license suspension. You don't get any kind of DMV hearing or due process, just a 1 year in Florida, 1 year automatic suspension. And then the fact that you refuse the test can be used against you in court as consciousness of guilt. And it also makes you ineligible for any kind of diversion programs, where the charges are dropped or lowered if you complete a DUI program. So We'll see. We'll see what they charge him with, you know, what kind of enhancements they might charge mm-hmm. him with, and if he's going to be able to get some kind of a plea. But again, it's like, how many times can you do this?
Yeah.
And get away with it. So I just feel like he has a lot of, and remember he went to sex addiction rehab, yeah. I believe after the.
Well, that was incident. How he was kind of trying to, I mean, again, how much, we don't know if he took it seriously. Like, we don't know yeah. if he was like, oh, I got to make some changes in my life. Oh no. Or if he just went because that's what he needed to do.
Yeah. And he's image. Clearly, he's had a lot of surgeries and then gets addicted to these pills that they give him.
Yeah.
For the surgeries. And I had forgotten that, you know, he's now dating,
Trump,
Vanessa Trump,
mm-hmm.
John or, Don Jr.'s ex-wife. And, you know, their daughter, Kai, she's a really good golfer.
Mm.
I think she's playing golf for the University of Miami, like maybe starting in the fall. And then Tiger's son is a really good golfer, and he's been, you know, working his way up on the circuit. He's a little bit younger. I think he's still in high school.
Mm. That's interesting that both the kids are golfers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it would make sense. It would make sense that his son would be, yeah, he's 17. I guess he's going to Florida State to play golf. So.
Well, but those genetics don't always, I mean, neither you nor I are golfers.
No, no.
The genetics don't always get passed down by generation.
Well, it's not the genetics. I think it's the proximity to someone who is a great golfer and who will take the time to mm-hmm. play golf with you every day, you know?
Mm-hmm. Dad would have done that if we wanted it.
Yeah.
If one of us had an interest, he would have, but we, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's like the lawyering, you know, he loved teaching me whatever he mm-hmm. could about being a lawyer. So yeah, it's the, that stuck. The golf did not.
Yeah. No, never stuck.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I have sympathy for Tiger Woods because I do really feel like his father fucked him up.
Yeah. Yeah. And put him in this, you know, I mean, it was a terrible position. I mean, again, he got a lot of, you know, it's been dysfunctional from day one. And then this thing that you love also probably represents something that you hate, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. right. You love this, you love your father, but you also are angry and mad. And, you know, I think that he's had a weird relationship with golf. And he also has the classic thing for a lot of athletes, which is there's a shelf life. And then mm-hmm. what do you do after? And it doesn't seem like Tiger's ever right. I don't see Tiger ever announcing golf. You know, he isn't doing anything with it. What has he been doing these last, I mean, I have no idea. Like what, to me, it just seems like he's been retired.
Well, I think he's been working with his son. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, he does have, he has a daughter as well who she's a little bit older. I mean, he's been being a parent. He does dip in and out of golf. Cause I remember, you know, Tiger Woods can qualify for a lot of these tournaments with his mm-hmm. eyes closed. You know, I don't think it's that hard to qualify for the Masters if you're Tiger Woods. So he'll show up at the Masters every few years. But the thing is, it's like people are going to be expecting more from him than he's really able to. You know, he's not in top condition.
No.
You know, physically, he hasn't been for a long time. And it's sad because, you know, this crash in California, where he just damaged his body so badly. And, you know, that contributes to him not being able to play golf. And
so do you think it's almost like he has a little bit of a death wish. I mean, he's doing very dangerous things. You know, obviously he can call an Uber. He can call like you've already been down this road. You know what's going to happen. That's the thing. I think some of it is that sort of entitled, right? Like I'm Tiger Woods, the rules don't apply to me. But I also wonder like, he's taking a lot of drugs, a lot of mixing. And Xanax is not for pain. Xanax is an anxiety thing. So he's mixing. I mean, they're all depressant.
Ambien. He was taking Ambien, Xanax, THC, Vicodin, and Dilaudid.
So you're mixing all these drugs, and then you're getting in the car, and you're trying to do. You're driving a million miles an hour. I mean,
I wonder
if he's just. Is it like? Do you want to die? Do you just want to feel something? Is this a cry for help? What is happening here?
Yeah, it's almost like he doesn't give a shit. I mean, he knows this is dangerous. He's been through this mm-hmm. before. He had to have contemplated, oh my God, what am I doing? This is crazy. And yeah, mm-hmm. it does feel a little bit like, I just don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care if I'm here or not, which is sad. The speeding and all of it. So, like I said, we'll see if they're going to take it seriously this time, if they're going to actually charge him appropriately and punish him appropriately, because he hasn't been punished appropriately. And this is why he keeps doing it partially. Mm-hmm. There has to be some consequences. He could have killed a lot of different people on his route.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Luckily, this thing, he hit this big, huge truck that was pulling a big trailer. So luckily that driver didn't get hurt.
Mm-hmm. But there's a little bit of, are you just going to keep going until you kill yourself or someone else or both?
Yeah, no, that's how it feels.
Yeah. So here in California, I always thought that the second DUI meant automatic 2 days in jail. Like you have to spend a weekend in jail.
Well,
is it different? Is it case by case basis?
I mean, okay, the way that it works for like first, second, third offenses and stuff, they have it can be up to a certain amount of time. So mm-hmm. a misdemeanor technically can be up to a year in jail. Mm. So if you have misdemeanor drunk driving, nobody gets a year in jail unless you do. Yeah. Unless you hurt someone, unless mm-hmm. there's some aggravating factors, because if we put everyone in jail, I mean, there's no room in the jails. So typically a first offense, you will get like maybe a couple of days in jail, which you can probably do community service for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's different. It differs. It differs from county to county and just how they charge things and how impacted they are and mm-hmm. a lot of different factors. And then obviously if there's accidents or if your blood alcohol level is above a certain amount, it can be enhanced. So it's different case by case and just depends.
Mm, okay.
But he's able to somehow, this reckless drive, it used to be in California, they'd call it a wet reckless. Mm. Like if you got a DUI and it was your first time, they would give you what they called a wet reckless, and there's no jail time or anything, and it was somehow perceived to be better. But you know, drunk driving or driving under the influence of anything, that is serious. We shouldn't be. Why is he getting reckless driving when they had the chemical test, all those drugs? Why did he get reckless driving when he's asleep in his car and the car's running at 3 a.m.
No, you're right.
There's so many aggravating factors. If this happened to Joe Schmo, mm-hmm. he probably would get a year in jail or maybe more.
No, so. you're absolutely right. And I think the thing with because listen, there's no excuse, especially in the world that we live in today with Uber and everything else, there's no excuse for driving under the influence. But I do believe that there is something about, like, I've known a few people over the years that have gotten a DUI, mm-hmm. right? And it's like the people that really, I do think that they make it painful, and I think it's good that they make it painful enough for people. Like, you're not going to ruin your life by getting a DUI, but they make it so painful that, yes, unless you have a problem, you are never going to do this
again. You're never going to do it again, yeah.
And I think that's a good incentive. But I think, again, we have another problem, which is whatever the second round of stuff isn't enough for some people. Cause I said, I've worked with people. There was one guy that we had in the treatment center that was like, had 11 DUIs. I'm not even joking. And I don't know how much time that guy spent.
Yeah, I know. I remember one of the very first cases I ever did was this man who had, it was in the teens. It was like 13, 14, mm. DUIs over the years, and he went to state prison.
Yeah, you know, good.
For a couple of years, which, yeah, probably really should have been done a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they always say this sort of this conventional wisdom that if you get more than one DUI, you're an alcoholic, because
yes,
like you said, it's so painful, you'll never do it again unless you cannot help yourself.
Yes, exactly.
So
every person that I've ever known, they never tempted fate. They never, right? Like, they just, that was it. They were done.
It wasn't worth it.
It wasn't worth it. So no, you're absolutely right. And I do think that there is a big difference between people that get it and get the lesson. Mm-hmm. But again, there's just no excuse for any, I mean, especially Tiger Woods, you know, it's like, you can hire someone permanently just to stand by and drive you anytime you need them to drive you.
Well, but that again, means that he's an addict.
He's an addict. But I also think that I think he needs the adrenaline. I think he's an addict, but I think he's addicted to chaos or adrenaline or death. Something more is happening than just addiction.
Yeah.
So, Tiger,
we hope you get better.
Yeah.
Okay. So last couple, little topics here. So, we're entering into a phase where the, companies like Meta, YouTube, TikTok, Snap, which was a Snapchat, are getting sued. There's a ton of lawsuits in the pipeline. And it's kind of like the tobacco cases.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same argument. The argument is that the manufacturer of this product knows that it's addictive,
mm-hmm,
and they know that it will harm people. The executives know it, but they sell it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're applying this legal theory to social media platforms. And so the very first case like this just went to a jury trial in Los Angeles, right? Is it Los Angeles, I believe. And so YouTube, I think it was YouTube or maybe TikTok and Snap, they settled before the trial started. But I believe it's Meta and YouTube went to trial. The jury found them liable for designing addictive social media platforms that harmed a young woman's mental health. So it was one plaintiff. And so she's, I think, 20 years old now. And she started at 8 or 9 on social media, spent all day every day on Instagram, which I don't know how you do that if you're 8 or 9.
Yeah.
In school. And this led to anxiety, depression, and body dysmorphia. And so they use this theory that social media can cause a personal injury. And the jury awarded $1.2 million in compensatory damages for her injuries and $3 million in punitive damages. That was against Meta. And then they awarded her $1.8 million against YouTube. And so they cited things like these features like infinite scrolling,
mm-hmm,
you know, where it's one after another, the algorithms and autoplay videos. And again, like we talked about earlier, you know, this is like the slot machine theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just keep going. So, I mean, look, this is a drop in the bucket. I mean, they were talking about in the closing argument, the attorney for the plaintiff, he had this big jar of M&Ms, and he says, for every M&M in this jar, it represents $1 billion that Meta has,
mm-hmm, you know,
billions and billions. And he's like, look, if you take out a handful, is this using this visual concept, if you take out a handful, that's still billions and billions of dollars. You take out two him. So it's going through this whole thing. And the fact that they only awarded $3 million in punitive damages, that's nothing. That's their electricity bill for the day.
Yeah.
you know, this is absolutely nothing. So I don't know. They're going to have these juries, if they do want this to stop, they're going to have to award a lot more than that. But also at the same time, there was a New Mexico case against Meta where the state attorney general brought a case for failure to safeguard users from child predators.
Hmm.
And in that case, Meta has to pay $375 million, which is better than $3 million or whatever, but still
not enough
in the bucket.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know how I feel about.
Yeah, I know.
How I feel about this.
I know, because there's a little bit, this 8 or 9 year old, it's like, well, where are the parents?
Yeah.
I mean, this is one thing, you know, it's one thing if this person was 25 or whatever, but where are the parents and why don't the parents have any responsibility? And listen, I'm not exactly defending Meta here, but like, mm-hmm. where are the parents? And again, this is what I've been saying for years. It's like, we don't know, again, like smoking, we just don't know what the impact's going to be. And now we're finally like, our government is just finally now coming out going, maybe this is a problem, right? It took 15 years of people, like before mm-hmm. anyone, the Surgeon General came out and said, you know, maybe social media is not the best thing. It's like, it's just, so I feel for parents because it wasn't really put out there, but at the same time, it's like, how do you let your kid, you're not paying attention. I mean, how are you watching
How's that
much? Where's your school? You have activities? Like,
yeah.
Dear God. Like, what is happening that you're 8 or 9 and you're constantly scrolling on Instagram?
Yeah. And you don't buy your kid a phone when they're 8.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, and I think we're seeing this more and more because recently I just started working with this younger generation. Cause I was like, oh, I need to meet these alphas, this Gen Alpha group. And I'm meeting more and more young people whose parents are not letting them have phones or social mm-hmm. media. And they'll say to me, you know, yeah, sometimes, and they've seen it and they've done this or that, but trust yeah. me, they're happier.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I mean, we're all discovering this. We're yes. all discovering that we're all happier if we limit our time on social media.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to give it up completely. I don't think it is for kids. Just like smoking is not yeah. for kids. You know, this is not for kids.
No.
This is for people whose, you know, frontal lobes are developed and can understand what they're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a big one. I mean, I'm with you. There's part of me that's like, this 8 or 9 year old thing, this is a bit ridiculous. I think the parents should have intervened and should mm-hmm. have. If she had anxiety and depression, I mean, did they not notice? Did they not realize what the source of it was? What, you know,
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, I think it feels a little bit like, well, that's a little easy for you to be like, well, no one told us it would be this. It's like, really?
Yeah. I think it's a slippery slope.
Yes.
And I'm interested to see, you know, there's more cases that are going to be going to trial in the coming months. And I guess we'll see where this goes. I don't know if it's going to go the way of big tobacco or if people are just going to be like, okay, enough. Like there's some personal responsibility. Cause like there's no upside of smoking. There is an upside to social media there. You know what I mean?
Well, the upside to smoking is it gives you relief. It gives you comfort. It gives you relief. You're addicted to it. There is an upside to smoking because smoking allows you to leave situations that you're not happy with. It's a social thing. It connects you to new people. It gets you away from people you don't like. It bonds people. I mean, there is an upside and it gives you a high.
Mm-hmm.
That's the upside of smoking.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. But there are upsides to social media
yeah, yeah.
used correctly
and it's
people who can take it.
But it's the same, it's sort of the same things, right? Social media allows you to escape. It allows you to bond with people. It allows you to get away from some people and move towards other people. Like it gives you that same, it's hitting those same receptors and same places. I guess, you know, I mean, that was the whole thing with smoking and putting things on, you know, when they started putting the label on cigarette packs of like, how ridiculous is this? Like, you know, we're, you know, you're buying this pack of cigarettes and we're just here to tell you that they're terrible for you. And that was our solution to it. Mm-hmm. But smoking didn't really change until truly the culture and the zeitgeist changed. Like the culture, like characters weren't written into shows that smoked, right? If you really think about like our culture and how things are, like characters now, you know, way back when, maybe, I don't know, a million years ago, it was very common for a main character maybe to smoke on a show or two, mm-hmm. or you would see this or that, or it would be part of it, or your parents or whatever. And then it's just part of our culture. Like it became less socially acceptable to be a parent at the park smoking. It became mm-hmm. less socially acceptable, right? Then the secondhand smoking. And then it became about, well, even though your kids aren't smoking, you are smoking to be around them. And what does that say about you? I mean, I just think that's part of like, it's not just these warnings. I think it's going to take us another 20 years of the shame.
But smoking's coming back. We talked about this on our
bonus. Yeah, no, smoking's coming back.
Coming back, and it is in movies. And Kylie Jenner is on the cover of Vanity Fair smoking a cigarette, or at least with a cigarette in her hand, a lit cigarette in her hand.
Yes.
I don't know if she's actually smoking it, but yeah, that was unheard of for a very long time, and it's coming back now. So,
because that's how sad things have gotten.
Yeah, but going back to like the social media, the other positive things about social media, besides just like a dopamine hit, mm-hmm. Is there is good information on social media. You know, I learn a lot. I mean, it depends on what you're looking at, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I learn a lot. It's a good way to disseminate information succinctly and quickly and about important things and not mm-hmm. just silly things. So yeah, I mean, I don't want it to go away. We have to learn how to use it responsibly. And because I noticed like with my daughter, she's much more aware of it. She'll set limits on, you know, I mean, you can always take these things off and change them, but she's trying to be mindful, trying to set limits, making a deal with herself that she's not going to look at, her phone, not look at social media for at least an hour after mm-hmm. she wakes up, or, you know, mm-hmm. so you don't get stuck in bed scrolling, that kind of stuff. So yeah, people are starting to realize it's okay to have this and to like it, but we have to put some parameters on it.
Yeah. So. I don't know. I just see so much of this as it feels all so interchangeable to me about how, yeah, being human is hard. Living is hard. We have all these feelings and emotions and things that are out of our control. And yeah, we're all looking for something to make us feel better.
Distract us,
make us feel better. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but like going on a run, yeah, it's going to give you a runner's high, but it's much easier just to scroll through TikTok, you know, and that's just human nature. We always go towards comfort. That's just survival.
Yeah.
So that's the part that's hard about these things that are very passive.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they become so addictive. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this is these lawsuits, like what is this gonna do? I mean, we need to have more parameters in place, I guess. I don't know. What drives me nuts is just the fact that I thought Facebook especially was trying to, during the election in 2000, weren't they printing things saying like
this is not true.
This is not true, or this is incorrect. And
I'm sure they got sued over that.
Yeah. So, I mean, isn't that a better focus to focus on and get holding them accountable for those things?
Yeah, I think it was just, I think that's just too hard. I mean, not that it's not possible, but but the thing is, if it's all about the addictive nature of it, then you know, that you can easily become addicted to it, then that's the focus of, but then, I don't know, you can become addicted to anything. I don't know how you make something non-addictive.
Yeah, I mean, but the quote-unquote solution isn't to ban alcohol. It isn't to, right, make drugs legal. We've all seen that making drugs illegal isn't changing anything.
It doesn't stop.
It comes back down to the same issues over and over again, which is it's about, right, the ability to manage your own feelings and deal with things. And the problem is that if you are constantly trying to make ends meet, if you're just hanging on by a thread, then you don't have the bandwidth to do these other things, to work on yourself or to address them. And so it goes back to, you know, it's, oh gosh, these billionaires could actually fix and solve, could actually feed everyone. Mm-hmm. So if really, truly you want a solution, you know, Zuckerberg, why don't you take all your billions and do something else with it? Then people would be in a better headspace because they're not worried about how they're going to eat.
Mark Zuckerberg is not going to.
No, he's not.
He doesn't give a shit.
No, I know.
You saw how people flipped out when we were in danger of losing TikTok.
Oh, God, yeah. No, I know. I know. I don't know how these men, I don't know how Bezos and Elon Musk and all of these people, I mean, Elon Musk is the wealthiest man in the world. You know, he gives away zero amount of money. Zero.
Well, all of them.
All of them. Bezos.
In relation to their wealth, they give away less than half a percent.
Yeah. You know who's giving away all their wealth? The women and Warren Buffett.
Yeah. Their ex-wives. Yeah.
They're the ones doing all the work. So, I mean, but again, we're back to the same thing. So how can we have all this greed? Where does the greed come from? Right. It's again, human nature.
Okay. Well, that's unsolvable.
Yes, it's unsolvable.
Let's move on real quickly. So Savannah Guthrie did a long interview with Hoda. She says she's coming back to work April 6th.
Well, I think you just have to, I mean, what do you do? Like, I'm sure she's just like, I'm just sitting around my house. I gotta find something to do.
Yeah. I mean, the main points that I came away with was she believes her family believes that this was a kidnapping for ransom. Mm. And she believes that two of the notes that they received with demands were real. And I believe that one of the notes said that her mother was dead.
Oh, gosh.
Because they, at one point, they were just like, they wanted her remains back. Mm-hmm. And I was just trying to think, like, and of course, she blames herself, like, because she feels like, well, this, what other explanation is there to take this woman other than someone knows that her daughter has some money, mm-hmm. you know, or access to money or something. What other reason, why would they target her? And it's just, I don't know, it's heartbreaking because there may never be an explanation. And I kind of have my own theory. I think that something happened. I think she did die in the process of being kidnapped. Because, you know, she apparently she had a pacemaker and she had to take medication every day or else she would die. I think she died probably from the shock of it. She's 84 years old, that she doesn't move well, she said. I think she probably died pretty quickly. And then a dead body, what is that worth? It's not working as a live person.
So that these guys were real amateurs. They kidnap her, not even, you know, realizing like, oh crap. And, you know, she's much older. What are we doing? And then she passes away. And then they're sort of in this weird position where it's like, what do we do?
Yeah. Because if you return the dead body, you're not, you know, you're probably more likely to get caught. I don't know. I have no idea, but it's just, it's so sad. And, Savannah was talking about, you know, her father died at 49 and her mother had to raise, you know, these three kids by herself. And, you know, she sounded like just a real, you know, great woman.
Yeah.
It's really tragic.
And this is how it all ends. Yeah. I'm sure they're heartbroken. It's awful.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't mean to like leave on a bad note, but I was just shocked that she was going to come back to work so soon. I can't even imagine. Yeah. Like sitting at the desk and having to talk about, cause a lot of stuff they talk about is kind of, you know, silly.
Mm-hmm.
After they do their hard news, you know, 30, 40 minutes of hard news and then mm-hmm. two hours of I don't know what.
Well, I mean, you know, we've had all these losses. We went right back. I mean, I saw a client the day dad died. I mean, you just kind of like, okay, you just kind of keep, what are you going to do? And I know this from cancer, just like it's actually better.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, like I remember after I had my first round of chemo and like returning to seeing clients, it helps because you get out of your own head, out of your mm-hmm. own thing, and then you're able to focus on something else and you're like, oh yeah, I do. This is better. So I understand it.
You're right.
I understand it. But yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well gosh.
Sorry.
Womp, womp, womp. All right, wrap it up, Brooke.
Okay.
Let's end on a high note.
Okay, I'll try. Thank you, listeners, for listening. If you like our podcast, you can help support us by subscribing to the podcast, by leaving a 5-star rating and review if you like our podcast. Also, we have a Patreon if you want more content from us, where we do a weekly bonus episode with hot topics, pop culture topics. And you get all these episodes ad free. And on our higher tier, we also do a monthly bonus true crime episode and a Ask Us Anything bonus episode. And we're on all the social media platforms at Psych Legal Pop Podcast. You can check us out there. Thanks for tuning in.
Yep. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.